Hey, real quick, before we start the podcast episode, I want you guys to check out our new YouTube channel for PT Biz. We are putting out a weekly video on the most common questions that we get, and we are breaking those down in a way that's more engaging, where you can learn better and really focus on one thing at a time. So if you're interested in really learning more skills to upgrade your cash and hybrid practice, head over to YouTube, subscribe to the PT Biz channel, and check out the weekly videos that we're coming out with to help you win in the cash practice game. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's going on, guys? Dr. Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and today we got Jeremy DuPont on from Boston, owner of Ripple Physical Therapy, or we just call it Ripple. I like the non-specific terms. We named our practice Athletes Potential because we didn't know if we wanted to make it a gym or if we wanted to make it a physical therapy practice. So we picked something that was vague enough that we could do whatever we wanted with it. And Jeremy's somebody who's been our mastermind now for a couple of years. Somebody we've got a chance to get to know, in a much deeper level and really respect a lot the things that he's been able to accomplish on the business side in a short period of time. And it's a pretty cool story. So I was excited to get a chance to jump on and share that. And I even had to stop Jeremy because he was going into all these like interesting things that I want to make sure I share with you guys about kind of how he got where he is. Because the interesting thing with Jeremy and what he's done is, and we work with a lot of different types of providers, but he's actually classically trained as a massage therapist, but owns a clinic that employs other, healthcare professionals within it, which we actually have quite a few people that are there. So we can kind of talk a little bit about the difference between practice act stuff with massage therapy and chiropractic and physical therapy. And for some of you that maybe you're on the fence of whether you should even go to school, this might be a good one for you too, because there are kind of other options with this. So let me do this, man. Let me tee it up here. Jeremy, first of all, thank you so much for your time today. I know you got a lot going on, but tell me this. Give us your sort of like quick background as to, how you ended up becoming a physical therapist, because it is kind of interesting, deciding not to become a physical therapist is what I mean to say, and end up opening your practice.
Yeah, I think, first off, thanks for having me on, Danny. I'm pumped to be here. We could talk for hours on this stuff, I think. So it's good to put us into podcast format here and tighten it up a little bit. But I think my story is pretty interesting. Kind of like along the lines of what you said there, like I'm a massage therapist, classically trained, and I went to school. I grew up in New Hampshire and went to school in Maine for college. And I moved to Boston because I was going to PT school. And I think long story short, I kind of, took a summer job in Boston working in one of the big hospitals there and really started to understand like what the PT field looked like. And I worked at an inpatient setting long story short, just was working in that setting and was just like, this is not what I thought physical therapy was going to be. Like, I thought I was going to be working with athletes or like getting ready to go work for the MLB or something along those lines. And here I was just changing sheets and doing a bunch of documentation. And I just had a realization of like, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I didn't end up going to PT school at all. And I got super lucky being in Boston. I took an internship at Harvard through their strength conditioning program, which really was a really great learning opportunity. One, because I got to see like what they were doing on the strength conditioning side with their athletes. And two, I parlayed it into a job where I kind of took the athletes that were coming from post-op and transitioning back into the strength conditioning world. And a lot of those athletes were always dealing with injuries too. So my role was kind of like that liaison from post-op surgery or coming off an injury and getting them back into the strength conditioning world. So they were almost doing like the physical therapy that I thought that I was getting into. Like, I thought this is going to be my job, is we're going to, cause I'm CSCS. I had worked with athletes in, the college level too. And, that side of the treatment is what I thought I was going to get into in a traditional PT clinic, which obviously I was very wrong about. And I saw what the insurance side of things looked like. And, but I realized, you know, it kind of opened my eyes to that, you know, the insurance side of PT and care was just so bad, but there was a way that people could learn how to move better and feel better and get out of injuries to a higher level. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I thought about, I was like, well, do I go back to PT school and go through that education process? And because I think I knew how to do the strength side of things really well, or the movement side of things, I guess you could say. I had taken a bunch of FRC courses, PRI courses, and you know, my movement knowledge, I think, was, you know, just as good as a physical therapist, but I couldn't put my hands on people. And I knew that was a really big missing component to it all. So is it, you know, do I want to spend $250,000 and go back to PT school for 3 years and, you know, potentially get put at one of those in-network clinics I didn't want to look at? Or was it, you know, I can go get my massage therapy degree, you know, put my hands on people, still do the exercise component, the things that I had learned. And I think a lot of my, like, my motivation was like the movement as medicine guys, like Kevin Carr. He works out of Boyle Strength Conditioning just north of Boston, but they were a massage therapist. And I thought what they were doing was really cool. And I thought that they were like starting to change the game a little bit in terms of like what people sought out to do. And they didn't go through the traditional PT clinic. So yeah, I kind of said, screw it. I'm going to go get my massage therapy degree. And I took active release technique, which really like helped me hone in my manual therapy skills. So I became a full body provider there. The functional range systems, they have a manual therapy course too, that I took all of the upper body, lower body, spine courses through them. And almost like, I kind of tell people, it's like, I kind of reverse engineered my education. So I didn't like go the traditional route of DPT school, but, you know, I feel like my education side of things, you know, it's not equal, right? I don't have my doctorate. I don't say I'm a physical therapist, but I think, you know, my knowledge of treatment is a little bit more on the alternative side and kind of where like the cash-based PT world is going. So, and making a long story short, that's kind of how I got here.
Well, you know, I mean, I think what's interesting about it is in some ways, there's benefit to not having a DPT as far as the practice acts are concerned. In certain states, it can actually be a hindrance in comparison to massage therapy, unless you want to do something like dry needling, right? And I think even in some states, there's some options to order imaging, but those are things that, you know, are, you don't really need to do in order to get outcomes. It might be part of what you want your treatment to be, but for what you did, what's so interesting about it is if you look at the cost comparison of 3 years in school, $250,000, a lot of money. Like what does massage therapy school cost?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a fraction of that for sure. I think I was able to like loop in some of my undergrad courses. Like I didn't have to take an AMP, and I took some online courses, and I basically just went through like a 12-week program. And I definitely didn't pay more than $20,000 for it, for sure.
Okay. So let's say 1/10, right?
Yeah, like it's right, exactly.
Well, what you didn't learn is the actual, like, you know, strength conditioning movement, the training side, the therapeutic exercise side, right? Of working with people, as well as, I think the big difference from what I've seen with my friends who are massage therapists, and you remind me a lot of a buddy of mine. His name is Rob Wilson, and he's in Virginia Beach, and he's legitimately probably the smartest person I've ever met. And what's so interesting about him is he's what I consider an autodidact. Like he's self-taught so much. He's self-taught himself everything. Like he reads the craziest shit, like the World War II physical fitness manual. Like he'll just nerd out on like what people were doing in the 40s for training and stuff. But remembers like every word of it. So he actually ended up going to massage therapy school very early on, you know, mainly because it was the fastest way in which he could kind of get into the industry that he wanted to get into. And he was somebody that used to teach with me for the stretch when I was teaching for Mobility Wad. And he was just always like, dude, what the hell, man? How do you know so much? But he was a very accomplished athlete and coach before he actually went to, you know, to go to massage therapy school. So he had this deep understanding of movement and strength and conditioning that doesn't get taught in school, right? So you kind of have to be okay with self-teaching that. You're not going to get that from your instructors and have more time to get that dialed in mentorships. But if you have that side of it, I think it's a very viable option for people that want to be able to do the manual side and the movement side. And even the Braves, like I know the Braves, like two of their providers are massage therapists that are also strength coaches. So they can do sort of in-house, you know, hands-on stuff, get somebody moving better and they can utilize their skill set together, which I think is great. And a lot of performance-based manual therapists, like physical therapists, do the same thing. It's just, you know, the degree is different, but the education afterward, PRI, FRC, ART, all I went through all these same things, right? I just happened to do it after finishing school. You did it after finishing your school. We end up in the same place. So it's interesting how you get there, but the cost comparison, dude, I don't know, man, that's a pretty good exchange. Not to deter anybody from going to PT school, but you know, if you got that side dialed in, that's a tenth of the cost. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think there's a scope difference with all of this too, right? Like right. There are certain things that I wouldn't feel comfortable with treating or certain things that like certain people that would come to my plate and I would 100% pass those people off because it's not my scope of practice. Like I don't have the traditional schooling for certain things. And, I think that's why I started to lean on physical therapists and why I started hiring PTs is because I can take my thought process and how I do things and the way that I know that like the way I do things, like patient care is above and beyond any sort of PT that I knew was doing anything, especially 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I think, you know, knowing what the education is for traditional PTs and the range of what they can do from, you know, super complex cases all the way to using their CSCS brain and really improving performance for people. I think like, you know, if I look back on it now, like I should have gone to DPT school. Like I just should have done it. I should have just bit the bullet and like figured out my entrepreneur brain afterwards. But, you know, I think the way that I, you know, started to think about patient care and what we can do with people, especially in an hour setting, you know, I definitely have to contribute that to like, again, kind of reverse engineering what my education is. But yeah, I think PTs are like the ultimate movement providers, right? Like they are the movement specialists. And that's where I think, you know, a physical therapist is the perfect person to be doing kind of what I reverse engineered. And that's why I've hired them.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like for sure that you're not wasting your time while you're at school. I mean, there's some things that are a waste of time. Don't get me wrong. But, I think overall people ask me, they're like, well, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I go to school? You know, unless somebody has this sort of like opportunity, you get so much good on the job training. You know, and I've seen this with people that I've worked with too, that like, I worked with this athletic trainer out in Hawaii that was amazing. But he was functioning as a strength coach. He basically became the strength coach for the entire division out there. And it was, but he also had like a lot of mentors at University of Hawaii, high level, Division I strength coaches. He had a lot of guys that were in the special operations community there. There were strength coaches that he was working with. So he got all this on the job training from these really smart people that were consolidating information for him. So his traditional background as a trainer, he became one of the better strength coaches I've ever met, mainly because he worked with people that were great and he listened and he was teachable, you know, and he wanted to like learn more. So, you know, I think that self-education is just as important, especially post-school, right? So, you know, and for you, like, the intent of this is not necessarily to have a debate on whether you should go to massage therapy school or physical therapy school. It doesn't really matter how you get there because like we don't really care. As long as you're helping people move better and you're teaching them how to take care of themselves long-term, we just need more people like that, no matter where they're coming from. But the thing that always interests me about what you've been able to do and that I think is just highlighting something that's pretty unique is you've done two things I think really well on the business side because you know, you started your practice and you've grown it now past yourself in a fairly short period of time. Cause let me backtrack here. Cause did you start in 2020 or was it 2019?
I started. Yeah. So I got furloughed during COVID and I went self-employed for that summer and just kind of tried to figure out what I was going to do with all this. And then self-employment went super well. I was very busy, which was great. And then I opened up our clinic now that January. So it would be, we just celebrated our 2 year in our clinic. So we're on our third year now.
That's right. Because I remember talking to you and you were like working with people in the park. And you're like, you bring a table and just meet somebody in the park because it was outside. And what a wild time to be, you know, a face-to-face, you know, job of some sort. Like, it's just crazy looking back on it. But I remember I was like, man, this guy's hustling. He's out in the park with a table. He's like working with people out in the grass. But it hasn't been that long. And in a, let's call it a 2-year period, roughly, you've built a very strong brand in the city, like very recognizable, done a really good job of actually, like, you know, continuing to build that brand presence and brand reputation. And the other thing is you've done a really good job of automating that business so that you don't have to be directly involved, which you don't even treat anybody at this point. So I want to really take some time to dive into two of those things, because I think, you know, people can learn a lot from what you've been able to do. So on the brand side, this is something that I actually didn't think was all that important, but I think stumbled into developing a brand unintentionally, and some of the things that we would call people and say, and it just fed into our brand. But you were very intentional about this. So tell me a little bit about your process to develop Ripple, the brand itself, and what does it mean, and why is that so significant that you wanted to name your company that?
Yeah, I think it was it's a whole story, really, and it's kind of a cool story. When I got furloughed and I was doing my own thing, you know, I was kind of like, I need like a logo or an email signature or just something that I can like post on my Instagram or website or the email newsletters I was sending out. And so I was, you know, following this kid on Instagram and I really liked what he was doing. He was like, you know, doing some like really cool illustrations, Photoshop, branding work for brands that I really liked. A lot of it was like outdoor companies, and he was working with New Balance and one of the local run clubs. And so I kind of just cold emailed him and was like, hey, man, I see that you're doing all this really cool branding work. You know, I think that, you know, I need something personally for my brand. And I really, you know, vibe with what you're doing and how your, you know, your branding tells a story. And it's not just a simple logo or whatever it is. And I kind of pitched to him that, you know, I think I'm going to start this PT clinic and I, you know, I think I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I know you work with a lot bigger companies than just me, who's just got laid off and don't really know what I'm doing, but, you know, was hoping you could help me like whip up a logo or, you know, help me out with this. And we got to chatting and he ended up working with me. And long story now, like, this kid's like one of my best friends now. I was just at his wedding and we've gotten very close, and he kind of took on the whole branding process, and I started to get more and more involved as we continued building it. But I think it was really important, and why he started and helped me out with all of this is that I kind of pitched to him that I want to start a physical therapy clinic, but I don't want it to look like the traditional PT clinic, because I have this whole story and I didn't go to PT school and I'm a massage therapist. And, you know, I'm really trying to like change the game on how people seek out like strength conditioning, movement, and getting out of injuries. And I've been doing this on my own and at another clinic, and it's been super successful. And I think that like Boston is going to start, like, this is going to become the normal in Boston. And I really want to create a brand around this. And so he was all in, and yeah, it was cool. He did everything from our color scheme all the way to naming the clinic. And, he's since like, he did all the interior design for our clinic, and it's all based around like what our mission is for the clinic itself. I never wanted this to be, you know, Jeremy DuPont physical therapy. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I knew my purpose and what I was trying to do with the clinic was bigger than that. And I really just, again, wanted to change how people sought out getting out of pain and getting in shape and optimizing what they're doing. So I think the brand was a really big part of that. And it was a really cool process. And I've since really got into branding side of things and how important that is, because you know, this is bigger conversation too, but I really believe that people stick around at our clinic for continuity. And I know there's lots of talks about that, but because they feel part of this story and what Ripple is. And, you know, that helps us with our sales process. It helps us with our marketing. You know, there's a whole vibe and brand around what Ripple is. And it's not, you don't walk in and you're like, I'm at physical therapy today. It's like, cool, I'm going to Ripple. Like, this is the best hour of my week. I get, like, I know what music's being played when I walk in there. I know what it's going to smell like. I know the experience that I'm going to get. And it's just much different than like having to go to PT this week in your 30-minute session. So that was the motivation behind like creating a brand. And Adam Danielson's my buddy's name. Like, we knocked it out of the park, I think.
It's an interesting logo, man. It's almost like a little bit of throwback, kind of vibe to it. There's a brewery here in Atlanta. It's like my favorite place to go. It's called Halfway Crooks, and they've done like their branding is kind of similar to like the font, and you know, not the colors are different than yours, but what I really appreciate people that take the time to do this, because like you go in there and it's mainly all German beers. So, you know, but they also have this sort of like analog, I guess, theme where there's like floppy disks that they're using for like your number, and there's like all these like old TVs in there, and everything just sort of like seems to fit, right? It'd be weird if you saw like a VHS player and everything else is, you know, new MacBooks or something like that. And these people have gone well past that. And it's really cool, like the way they've set it up. So I think it takes a lot of attention and time to do so, but you're basically creating an experience for people is what is happening. How do you go about doing that and indoctrinating people into that? You know, aside from obviously like the logo, the visual side, the web presence, but I mean, is there like an ethos you guys have, or there's sort of like core values that you're talking about with these folks whenever they come in, and it's just like, hey, we're different and here's why.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, obviously experience and all of that. And it's funny you talk about like our typography. We've pulled that from like the old school's like Topps baseball cards. Like that's the font that's on the Topps baseball cards.
It looks and like,
So it's like, if you look at any of the, like I was born in 91. So like, you know, 98, 99 baseball cards were my jam back in the day. And like, so that's like very nostalgic for me. And a lot of our demographic is in the same age group. So, you know, that's part of our whole brand. And you walk in, there's like a little Roger Clemens, like in a Red Sox jersey, like action figure there. And it's just like very little things like that, that people love it. And they just like really, they really jive with it. And they understand, like, again, like they're being invited into this story. And this is very detail oriented and custom from them. And if we care that much about, you know, making sure this place smells the same every time they walk in, you get that thought of like, oh, cool, I'm at Ripple now. Then like, they know the clinical care side of things is going to be above and beyond too. So I think that really plays well into what we're trying to do. And we're just trying to give like a different experience than they would get if they went to, you know, the Mill Clinic across the street. So just how do we differentiate ourselves?
I don't think it's too hard to be different than that. You know, I mean, this is kind of what I tell clinicians too, because I think they get nervous about what, you know, starting their own thing. And what do you do? There's so many things that you have to do, you know, so there's a lot when you start a business or you start a clinic or whatever. But I typically tell people, like, you really only have to be slightly better to feel significantly better, because the average healthcare experience sucks. No one looks forward to it. There's no, it's not a fun thing to do. People are usually, you know, they show up at one and they're not seen until like 30 minutes later. And it's just this redundant, boring thing. Every drop ceilings and like the lights all suck and they're doing the same things. And you don't have to be that much different. You just have to like try a little bit to make the experience better. And if you can think, man, what would I want my friends to be able to experience, or even your family, right? Maybe it's just like, man, how would I want my dad to be treated if he went somewhere, right? Like, it's just the start of a completely different experience. And that difference is what makes the service business viral to other people, that they want to spew on everybody their opinion of where they should go, because it gives them status. And if you put yourself in that place because it's a different experience and you match it up with results, then all of a sudden, you know, people are going to talk about you a lot. And we see a lot of speed in business develop that way. So how would you say for you, when you guys started going, like the I guess the the snowball effect of that, that you were able to have. How long was it before you hired that first clinician? And was that weird for you, by the way? Was it weird for you to hire, you know, somebody that's just traditionally massage therapists aren't hiring physical therapists, other way around?
Yeah, I think, you know, shout out to my first hire. She definitely took a chance on it because I was like, hey, I've got the space. Like, I know it looks cool. It was only half built out at the time, really. But, you know, I was almost selling her of like, I'm trying to change what quality of care looks like. And this is my vision and mission. And I think she was just so fed up at her traditional job. She was like, whatever, like I get 60 minutes with someone. That sounds great. Like I'll take it. So I think it was, you know, and now like, you know, she's since grown and she's a huge part of what we do. So I was very lucky to have that hire, but, you know, any PT that I talk to, I think it's, you know, it's a weird conversation for sure because I am a massage therapist, but at the end of the day, it's like, we're trying to change what quality of care looks like for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a chiro or a strength coach or a massage therapist. You know, I think that's really the mission behind all of this. And that's what our brand really represents. And that's like all of our copy behind that. It's, you know, people see in Boston, like they associate Ripple with this like above and beyond experience. You know, if you're really actually looking to get out of pain, this is the place you go to. And I think, like you said, the snowball effect there, it was really cool to see. And like one of my first like aha moments was like, me personally drove a lot of the business at the beginning of it. It was like, hey, you gotta go see Jeremy. He's doing this different thing. And then once I started, like, you know, Ripple became what actually came out of people's mouths. It wasn't go see Jeremy. It was, you got to go to Ripple. This place is cool. You get the best clinical experience that we've had. They'll get you in this week. It's a 60-minute session, blah, 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 all that stuff. And once people started associating Ripple with that, as opposed to me, that's when we just like really started to grow. I hired two PTs within a couple months of each other. They both like, you know, very full schedules very quickly. And, you know, it's now we have a repeatable process with that brand essence behind it. It's just like a killer combination.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you organize multiple different types of practitioners within the profession now, or within your practice, should say? So like, are they all sort of overlapping? They're kind of doing the same thing and this sort of repeatable framework that you've developed for the practice, or do they sort of work together in different areas where they have better depth of knowledge or subdisciplines or whatever it might be? Like, how's that function within the day-to-day?
Yeah. So we like all of, so I've got three staff PTs on board now. And they all have autonomy on how they treat. We have like a certain competency program that everyone that comes on board will go through, and it's, you know, it's rooted in SFMA. And then if you want to go take PRI or FRC, or you want to expand your knowledge, then you can kind of create this own like systematic, you know, mindset of how you treat. Like that's one of the big things that I think is, you know, allowing a physical therapist to have like some clinical critical thinking is very important and makes the job that much more enjoyable for them, and they can kind of do what they want. So yeah, we stay in the realm. Like we are a PT clinic. I have a sports massage therapist on staff, and he does more like the traditional, if people just want like a massage, they'll come in and do that. But yeah, we lean into the movement heavy physical therapy now. And it's this mix of, you know, you start in stage one of this traditional PT, you come in and this is where we're going to get you out of pain. This is the more traditional PT. And we kind of invite them into this story of, you know, in 3 months, we're going to get you to stage two, which is going to be more of this like very sports specific physical therapy. Traditionally, this is where a normal PT clinic would discharge you. And this is where we're different because we're going to continue treating you and helping you and getting you stronger. And, you know, your goal when you first came in here was to just run your 5-mile loop. Well, now it's, let's go run a half marathon, or let's hike that mountain, or whatever it is. And I think that's, you know, that's where we lean into like changing what PTs do.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I mean, I think that ongoing work is something that a lot of people are looking for now. They just don't know where to search for it, right? They want like an advocate for like their health someone they can work with to achieve goals. And I think for a lot of people, they don't even realize it's like at a certain age, they give up on physical goals, like achievements, right? It's like, I want to get out of bed and not be in pain. You know, I want to be able to, whatever, pick my kids up. And, you know, reinstating that like athlete mind, or maybe they never really did that before, but just giving and the ability to say like, what would you like to do? You know? And I remember I asked a lot of patients that, and it's an interesting question to ask them, you know, if you let's say you didn't have these physical limitations, like what would be something really cool that you would like to do physically? Right. And some of it was, you know, just run a half marathon, whatever. People come with all kinds of stuff. I had a guy and he was like, I want to row across the Atlantic Ocean in a single man boat by myself. Like, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. And he did it. And like, that's the cool thing. It's like, then, all right, cool. Like, what's the training for this? What's this look like? And reverse engineering that with them. And I don't think a lot of people actually really, everybody asks them like, what are your goals? Like, what would you like to do? What would be awesome for you to be able to see like your friends and your family to see you doing? So I think that's cool. And I think it's great for the business. It's better for the business because you're developing more recurring revenue and people are coming back in and you're developing these really deep long-term relationships that don't really exist in healthcare. You know, I mean, most people, they see their dentist more than they're going to go see a physical therapist or a general practitioner, right? They just engineered that you don't want to get a cavity, which is pretty smart. But for us, I think there's a huge market for that. So one thing that I do want to touch base with you, and this is where I think you can really nerd out, like the experience and all that stuff, and you've been very intentional about the brand. But when I think about, you know, the other things that you've had success with in business or reasons why you've had a lot of success is the ability to like really think about your customer experience, which is something that, you know, we just went over at our mastermind. It's like, you know, it's stuff that's can be very intentional, but then be able to leverage technology to help implement that at a high level when you're not around. Cause you know, I didn't even know that you didn't live near your practice until you told me before this. I was like, wait a second, you're an hour and a half away, you know? And you can only do that if you have things running really, you know, tightly. So when did you come to the conclusion that you needed to start to like put your nerd brain on, right? A nerd hat on and really start getting after understanding how can you leverage technology into the practice?
Yeah, I think well, first off, I'm super lucky where I have like my staff now in clinic, like they don't need me there anyway. So like they've built like the autonomy out themselves that like, you know, they're so solid on. And I think this speaks to like the systems we built out too, like that this wouldn't be possible without our systems being super solid. But, you know, my staff has kind of, they crush it in every sense of the word, which has allowed me to like, fully take a step back and really, like you said, nerd out on this technology automation side of things. I think like I've always looked at like the running the business a little bit differently than everyone else too. And maybe this is because I'm not like traditional PT, but I never like was worried about going and searching for the next like new patient. Like we don't really run workshops. We don't really do anything along those lines. But what we do really well is like nurture our ethos of, you know, people that are in our system. So we're always kind of, you know, emailing them, providing them with, you know, certain eBooks or sending them blog articles that are going to be relevant to them. And I think that's where my thought process came into play of, I really need to leverage technology and automate a lot of this stuff because that's, our biggest marketing scheme is to just get people that are in our system to get them to continue to come in. And I've always thought about, you know, personal training, strength conditioning, PT, whatever you want to call it, as like it's a year long thing. It's not something that you come in for 12 weeks and then you're out of here and then you're back in. And I really built our clinic on the back of like continually reaching out to people. And every 3 months I've got my list of people that I reach out to. And we grew pretty quickly. So that list of people that I'm reaching out to got too big for me to just manually do. And that's kind of where I sought out like a CRM system. I knew I needed to upgrade my systems. And that's where, yeah, I really leaned into the automation side of things and knew how powerful it was to, you know, reactivate an old patient and get them back in the door. And not only from like a revenue wise, but like the patient was so, they're always so thankful that you reached out to them. They're like, thank you for staying on top of me. Like, I've been meaning to come in, but I just haven't. And, you know, I know this is the 20th time you've sent me an email, but thank you for doing that. Like, my Achilles is actually killing me. And so I just knew like that's more sustainable than going and finding new people, doing this workshop, getting this new person in the door. And I was like, how do I do this? And how do I automate it? And that's where I landed on CRMs and automation and all those systems.
So first of all, if somebody is like thinking about trying to do a better job of automating their practice and they're, and like, we're clinicians, right? Most of us are not the most technically driven people. You know, we shouldn't be. I mean, we want to be helping people get better at what, you know, whatever it is that they want to get back to, get out of pain and get back to whatever that is. And there is a bit of overlap in terms of being like systematic about things, because when we are evaluating and treating people, we have to be systematic to make sure that we're not missing things. And I look at this in a very similar light, except it's such a different thing because it's a completely different tool and technology and using that. So if somebody's listening to this and they're like, hey, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. CRM is customer relationship management software, basically, right? So it's how do you communicate with people and keep that organized? But like, what would you say the first step should be for somebody if they have a practice and they feel like they're a bit disorganized? Where would you recommend that they start to get that group of pre-existing people, which is so valuable? It's probably the most valuable part of your entire practice, if I'm being honest. Like, if somebody was to buy your practice, your list is probably worth the most out of everything that you have and your goodwill with those folks. So where would someone start this, like thinking about trying to get better organization with that?
Yeah, it's funny. At the mastermind event, I had this conversation a lot with people, and this is I kind of like took bigger questions that people had and how do I make this super complex? And I'm like, why don't we just start with setting up a free CRM? There's loads of different options that you can do, and like just putting your people in that CRM. And like, let's just start there and you know, take things off of your you know, the 20 different tech stack tools that you have or the Google Sheets or whatever it is, and like, let's just get this in one place and try to organize it to the simplest form you can, whether it's, you know, people that you're currently working with, people you used to work with, and people that are just like subscribers to your email list. Like, let's just start there. And now you have an overview of who's where and what everyone's status is. And that's not a ton of upkeep to like change someone from customer or, you know, prospect to customer or whatever it is. And now you have a general overview of where everyone's at, how many people are in each stage. And now you can say, you know, I have all these leads that have come in. They haven't ever purchased a package with me. I probably should be reaching out to those people a little bit more often than not. Let's just start there. And, you know, a lot of the conversations I have with people is, you know, are you sending a weekly newsletter out? And most people are not doing that. And it's like, okay, let's start there. And if you have your people organized and you're sending weekly newsletters out, then you can start to, you know, go a little bit deeper. But until you're doing the foundational things and have some sense of organization, like getting super complex is not the way to go.
I mean, just that, right? Like, let's say you have 200 people you've worked with and another 200 on your list that haven't come in, right? And so let's say half those people are active. So 100 are actually working with you, 100 are past customers that are not coming back in, and 200 that are on your list that have never come in. When you look at something like that, what would you say like the biggest difference in messaging should be for people that are, because you should be communicating with everybody, but some are actively working with you. Some aren't working with you anymore, but have already paid you. They know that I can trust you. And the other half don't know you too just yet. So what would you say the biggest differences between those three populations are?
Yeah. And I think it's a great point of like the messaging for all those people has to be different. Like you can't be sending the same email to a new lead who maybe just signed up for your newsletter or downloaded an ebook or whatever, who has no idea who you are and no idea what you do. And like, you can't be sending the same, you know, copy to those people as you are with someone that just finished their package and is feeling great and probably should be continuing on with you, but decided not to purchase a continuity package or whatever it is. Like, that's two totally different messages. The avatar for those two people are totally different. And I think where we started to find the most success was just implementing in a very basic sequence to those very cold customers. As we started to gain more traction with our business, we had more and more people that were submitting forms or reaching out to us or whatever it is, but they had no idea who we were and no idea what physical therapy really was, and especially not like what we were doing for physical therapy. So by us just sending very basic 5-6 email sequence describing what PT is and how we do physical therapy difference, totally changed the game for our like conversion numbers, and it made our PTs' lives much easier when they were coming in for evaluations. If you do make that conversion, like, this person already knows our price points and why we're cash-based and why we don't take insurance and what we do and how we do things and all that stuff. So that's where like the messaging for them is totally different. Whereas someone that finished up their package, you should be talking more about, you know, new goal setting or how to stay on like a monthly maintenance plan, or, you know, your hip doesn't hurt anymore, but you should be doing X, Y, and Z strength conditioning exercises, or, you know, that you really got to categorize that stuff. So I think, you know, I harp on the weekly newsletter just to stay top of mind with everyone, but that getting very specific with email campaigns is where that's where like you can really grow things really, really fast.
Well, I think the other thing that people shy away from when it comes to email marketing is they feel like they're a nuisance to the people that they're emailing. And I mean, if you're listening to this and you're on the PT Biz email newsletter, like, or just in your, if you're in our CRM, you're getting emailed probably 3 times a week. One is a content wrap up that just shares with you all the content we put together the prior week. One is a client win that we send every Wednesday. And then one is basically a lesson that I've learned at some point in time that I'm sharing that has to do with business, right? And our unsubscribe rate is very low. Our open rate is very high. And it's because we're not just selling to people. Like, we're sharing things that we think are going to be helpful for a population that is interested in the stuff that we're talking about. So I think you have to keep that in mind as you're putting together content. And then something as simple as a weekly newsletter, you can't just send a weekly newsletter together that's like, hey, let us know if your knees are bothering you. Like, come on back in, right? Like, everyone will unsubscribe from that. But you could look at something as simple as Tim Ferriss has this, I think it's called Five Line Friday. And it's basically just 5 bullet points of things that he thinks are interesting. It could be an article. It could be a quote. It could be a piece of content that he's done or whatever, but it's literally like 5 lines. And the open rate on those emails is really high, and the click-through rate really high. And all he's doing is basically sharing relevant, helpful things to the people that have already raised their hand that they're interested in those things. So you got to think of it that way. And by sending that every single week, that should be a no-brainer for everybody, even if you're just starting out, because you're starting to build that that system and also develop the ability to convey what you're saying in a written word, which is called copywriting, which is actually a pretty difficult skill to learn. So when you pick this stuff up, because this isn't, I've spent a lot of time and money on coaches for digital business stuff, and copywriting has always been a big part of that, but it's this difficult skill to learn. What was your transition to learn that? Because I feel like it's not easy. We're used to writing notes for physical therapy purposes, for, you know, for patient purposes, not emails that are engaging to hopefully get people to take action.
Yeah, I think this, like, it goes back to like the branding conversation too. Like, yeah, part of Ripple's brand is this like we're very casual, and like we have conversational copy is like a huge thing that like works really well with us. But that's like, that's the vibe and the feeling that I want people to get when interacting with Ripple. So we always say it's like you come in and it's very casual, but like the clinical experience you're getting is over the top. So we take the clinical side of things very seriously. The other side of it, not so seriously. But yeah, copywriting is one of the things that I really nerded out on. And I really love being able to like reading different like sales copy for different branding. And like, I could read like old, you know, newspaper ad sales copy all day long. Like, I love that stuff. I think it's really, really interesting. So that was something that I really leaned into, and there's lots of, you know, good books out there. But I think it's just like, you know, you got to be part of those newsletters, like a Tim Ferriss newsletter or a James Clear newsletter, and just like digest what they're putting out there and understand, like, you know, as you're reading it, like, do you want to continue reading to the next line? Like, that's good copy. And again, like, that can, you know, I think you say all of that, right? But the main thing is like, you just got to do it too. Like, you don't get bogged down like, this doesn't sound good. Like, oh crap. Like, you know, I think it's just be yourself. Like, I think I talk about all the time with my team of like, conversational copy is the most important part. I think PT Business Newsletter does a really good job with it. Because you just want people to continue reading on. And I think if someone opens up a newsletter that just like has links to these like scientific articles or studies about ACLs, like, the normal person doesn't want to read that probably. Right. Like, maybe a certain percentage of your list does, but tell a story, like, talk about what's going on. Like, running is huge in Boston right now. So we're, you know, telling like kind of funny stories about people getting hurt running, or, you know, trying to relate to what people are doing. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just, you know, have fun with it. But also, you know, people, you shouldn't feel like you're annoying people or think that people are going to unsubscribe. If you're providing like, you know, just provide some sort of, you know, just make the person want to open it each week. As long as you're providing value, then they're going to want to continue opening. It doesn't matter. You could email them 10 times a week. If every email they open has value behind it, then they're going to continue opening it. And I think that's a big thing that people got to realize.
Well, you brought up a really good point too. And it's about, like, the voice that you're using, I guess, is a good way to put it, with writing emails, and who your audience is very important. I know one of the bigger mistakes I made early on was writing blog posts that only really made logical sense for like other clinicians to read. And I got zero patience from it. I got a lot of clinicians that wanted to argue with me about things or tell me that I was right. And I started to realize, I was like, my audience is not other clinicians around the US. Why am I writing this, right? So some of what your people like typically make mistakes with is, yeah, they make things too complex. They're talking to other clinicians instead of patients. And they're not clearly sort of getting across like something helpful for that population and making it really simple. And I would say one other thing, that if you're struggling with this and you're talking about conversational copy, it's like, if you're writing an email to your friend, like write a newsletter like you're writing an email to your friend. I think we could become so indoctrinated in documentation that's supposed to be very formal. And our communication should be very formal, like with other clinicians, because there's just an expectation that you're a profession or you're a professional and you should act that way, but you don't want to market that way. As odd as that sounds, right? Like, you wouldn't think that maybe you want your health and wellness professional to be less professional, but you become far more approachable when you do that. And what one thing that I'll never forget is somebody who joined the mastermind. He told me straight up, he was like, I decided to join your coaching program when you dropped an F-bomb in one of your Friday emails, and it had something to do with my kid. And I was like, I'm like, this is crazy. Who writes this? And I just send stuff like the way I would talk to anybody. But it's just the way you should do it is this conversational approach, because it just shows your personality. It will repel the wrong people, and it will really attract the right people that are going to be the right people in your brand, right? So, I mean, I think for you guys, it sounds like you really dialed that in. How do you leverage the other providers with that though? Are they getting involved in that with their subspecialties, or are you mainly the one that's sort of coordinating all the marketing side of things?
Yeah, I do, like, up till this point, at least that's like been my main role, is, really handling the marketing side of things. Staff now is like getting on board with the social media things and putting more content about that. But I think that's like part of my hiring process, is if you don't fit what our brand is doing, then like, this isn't going to work. Like, right. It's another test within my interview process now. It's like, if you're not going to fit with our culture and you're not going to be able to write, even if you're not a good writer, or you don't want to do writing, like, your communication skills have to be similar to what we're doing here. Like, we'll never be able to have like a super like highly clinical person that doesn't really have any personality skills. Like, I don't think that works in the cash-based side of things anyways, but just wouldn't fit with our team and our vibe, and it'd come off as really inauthentic. So I think that, delegating those tasks to staff is very easy for me, because I think they've seen me do it up until this point, and they now are able to, write caption copy that's very similar to what I would write. And they've been exposed to a lot of the things that I've done up till this point, and, able to copy it. And I think that's where a good brand comes from, is like, I think a good brand kind of stems off of the founder and what their values are. And a good brand can repeat that even after the founder isn't there anymore. So I think it's cool to see. And I think a lot of it goes into like our customer journey too. And we're able to really figure out like where our avatars are at in space within their customer journey. And we send them very specific copy based on all that stuff. And it doesn't matter if they're seeing me or Casey or Reggie or whoever, like, they're still getting that same messaging, and we're able to replicate that regardless of who they're seeing.
Yeah. What's the, what's the vision for Ripple going forward? Yeah. I mean, I know you're not on the clinical side anymore, which is for a lot of people, that's maybe something they always want to be involved in. For you, it's interesting. It definitely seems like you're more interested. You have more of a natural tendency to want to learn about business stuff than clinical stuff, right? So you kind of turned your attention more to that side of it. So, like, what are the next steps for you within the practice?
Yeah, I think, like I said at the beginning of all this, with our brand and what we're trying to do is change the narrative of how people sought out clinical care in Boston. And I think that's been my goal since day one, and to this day is still our goal. So really, like, we just want to make Ripple a household name in Boston, to be like, it's not like I got to go to PT. It's like, no, you got to go to Ripple. And like, this is the experience that you need to go and have. And so I think that's our goal. Again, I'm super lucky. I've got absolute killer team on staff that is like going to continue to grow this thing without me even being in the fold clinically wise. So just absolute game changers in Boston, which is really cool to see. And they've since like taken on bigger roles as I've stepped away. And I think the future is even brighter with them kind of leading the charge than with me. So it's cool to see. But yeah, I think Boston's funny. It's on every corner, there's a cash-based clinic somewhere. So, yeah. Which is cool. Like, we've got a really tight-knit group of business owners, and none of us are our competition. I think we are all like moving towards the same goal of changing care in Boston, and Ripple's, I think, massive part of that, just as much as all of them are too. So, it's cool to see.
Do you miss being a more like day-to-day involved in the culture of the practice now that you're not quite there as much?
Yeah, I do, for sure. I don't think my staff members miss me like just hanging out and wasting their time and like just like mucking it up with them a little bit, but I definitely do miss that part of it. But we do a really good job, and I think this is like good advice for any clinic owner, of ensuring that we have like team activities and we're all slacking each other constantly and no one feels like they're on an island, whether they're on vacation or in Maine or wherever. And, you know, we're always like, we're doing a huge, like, March Madness bracket right now. And so we're all just, and my staff is awesome with that stuff too, of everyone's just trying to get involved. And this is much more than clock in, clock out. This is like, I want people to like actually enjoy hanging out with their staff members. And so I definitely do miss that part of it, of just being around the team, but you know, Slack, Zoom, all that stuff makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. I think one of the best litmus tests of a team is just how is their Slack channel. And it's like, it can't all be business, you know, there's gotta be like some sort of fun as well. And so you could probably look at most companies, their Slack channel, and you know, Slack is just an internal communication software that lets you basically internally text and send documents and stuff, helps clean up some of your inbox. But yeah, you'll see like, there'll be funny stuff in there. They're like shouting out somebody about their birthday. You know, it's not all business. I think it's really important to see that and your culture. It's like a way to extend that for sure. So, well, Jeremy, this was fun, man. I definitely want to be mindful of your time. I know you got a lot going on. If people are interested in like learning more about Ripple, or if they're a clinician even, and they're like, man, that sounds like a cool guy to work with. The company sounds cool. Where can they go to learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So the clinic itself is at Ripple Boston, on Instagram. You'll definitely find us there. And then, you know, my ad is just Jeremy DuPont. So, super easy to find both of us, but yeah, I love talking shop with, business owners just in terms of automation and all that stuff. So happy to talk more on that. And then, it's cool having like the branding conversation with a lot of other clinics too, and how to take, you know, their, again, like X city physical therapy and change it into something that like actually means something and has like a cool feel behind it. So, I love having those conversations as well.
Well, we'll definitely have a part two. So, we'll do that. Cause I would love to dive more into the, you know, the automation of the business, and we definitely like, we're going to need a good bit of time to do that. But it's super fascinating. It's something that is pretty exciting to see implemented at a high level in a practice. But man, thank you again for your time. This was great. And as always, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, Peach Entrepreneurs, we have big, exciting news, a new program that we just came out with that is our PT Biz part-time to full-time five-day challenge. Over the course of 5 days, we get you crystal clear on exactly how much money you need to replace by getting you ultra clear on how much you're actually spending. We get you crystal clear on the number of people you're going to need to see and the average visit rate you're going to need to have in order to replace your income to be able to go full-time. We go through three different strategies that you can take to go from part-time to full-time, and you can pick the one that's the best for you based on your current situation. Then we share with you the sales and marketing systems that we use within our mastermind that you need to have as well if you want to go full-time in your own practice. And then finally, we help you create a one-page business plan. That's right, not these 15-day business plans. You want to take the Small Business Association, a one-day business plan that's going to help you get very clear on exactly what you need to do and when you're going to do it to take action. If you're interested in signing up for this challenge, it's totally free. Head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge. Get signed up there. Please enjoy. We put a lot of energy into this. It's totally free. It's something I think is going to help you tremendously as long as you're willing to do the work. If you're doing the work, you're getting information put down and getting yourself ready to take action in a very organized way, you will have success, which is what we want. So head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge and get signed up today. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT Entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT Entrepreneur, and we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.